Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast that is focused on a zero emission future. Yes, it is. But and this week, as you already know, I used to try and keep it a secret and sort of give a big build up, but your name's on the bit that you click through. So we are joined by Dev Chana. Oh, MD of EDFRI. I always thought it was EDF, but it's not. It's EDRI, right?
I'll take that bit, Paul, but yeah. Thank you, Paul. Hello, Sarah, as well. You got my name right, so I'll give you that, Dev Chana. And I think you got
Hooray.
Most... It's EDRI, EDRI, but fundamentally, it's short for Eon Drive Infrastructure. And I guess I'm on point for running the charge point operator for Eon here in the UK.
There you go. So that was the bit that confused me, because I saw it this morning and I was thinking it was Eon. But anyway, what an idiot. Like, totally professionally prepared. I've read everything else and just didn't get that bit right. Anyway, as you know, we don't edit out the nonsense. But anyway, we're joined by Sarah Sasloman, the powerhouse that is. Sas, how are you? You good?
Thank you for having me. I didn't want to miss this one because, devil, I've got unfinished business that took place somewhere in a rainy, horrible car park in
Clear
Wales.
Clear this up quickly.
The equipment was going beautifully. Yeah, the equipment was going beautifully. We stopped there for the EV rally, and I'm hoping we'll go into that during this episode.
Fantastic. Well, it is great when we get joined by leaders on the podcast, you know, people that are truly kind of at the cutting edge. But do you know what I loved? I got a little bit of a sneak preview into this. How did you get this job? Talk to us, because I love, there's a real humble element to the way that you put this across. And I was really kind of quite surprised by that. Talk us through the job process.
Yeah, look, thanks, Paul. Thanks, Sarah, as well. I guess fundamentally, most people that meet me assume that really all I know, what I am, is an EV guy. That's not quite the case. You know, I'm more of an energy guy. I started life falling out of university as an oil broker as some firm over in Kensington. Yeah, which is quite, I guess, the very much the dirtier end of the fuel. And I've had a number of gigs since then. I've been on the management team of a power station before. That was a renewable power station in its own right. And that was very interesting. And that happened to be on Europe's largest private wire network as well. And there's a whole story around data centers and stuff like that. I've worked for an energy tech startup before, flexibility items, things like that. I've worked for another major utility before as well, before joining E.ON. I worked on a number of large mechanical, electrical engineering tenders and projects there. And then actually, it's probably in the last 7-8 years, which in most other industries, I think we'd say is still the new boy on the block. But in our EV industry, it's considered somewhat of an old, safe pair of hands, which really does make me feel like a dinosaur now. But I've been working in the EV sector. I started a business, I think it's really called eVault now. It was called Swarco back then. I then transitioned to, I guess, the startup team of what we see as Pogo, this charge point operator. And then just over 3 years ago, I got picked up by Eon or Eon Drive Infrastructure. So that's where I am now, just over 3 years. And they were looking to, I guess, run a bit of an experiment in terms of, was it worth having a public charging arm in here in the UK? And I guess in the most casual sense, I said, yeah, I'll give it a spin for 12 months or so. And they said, yeah, let's give it a spin for 12 months or so. And here we are a number of years later. But there's a short run, Paul, of my CV and what I've been up to. But what I would say, it's got cleaner. I'm very wedded to everything I do, particularly since I worked for that energy tech startup. It's got to be clean technology. And my moral compass has really kicked in the last decade or so.
What I love about your journey, Dev, is you've got this awesome German efficiency backing you as you roll out these electric drive things across the country. And you can't avoid Eon as a brand. I just opened my email to get the link for this awesome podcast together. And the first email in my inbox is, are you on the right tariff? Come over to Eon. You've got an electric car. And it's just that combined branding is so powerful. But as we alluded to at the top of the show, we first met, Dev, and I'm so glad you accepted our invitation to come on this show. We first met at the second stage of the Welsh rally. It was the EV rally. The rain was coming in sideways. You had your team helping people to plug in their cars. And you did a piece to camera about what really matters to you with the infrastructure that you're rolling out. And there was a, I don't know if you remember this, there was a family on the end who had a puppy in the car and the children were all playing in the console within the vehicle. And it was that day that I realized you are quite a lot of heart. You've come from the oil industry and now you feel like a dinosaur. It feels like a complete full circle.
Yeah, I do remember that, Sarah, really well. I think the first thing is I don't have much hair left, so I'm never worried about the rain anyway. Paul, maybe there's an agreement there. I'm not going to go there too deep.
It was the glasses, guys. Both of you just couldn't see a thing. All of the rain was just on your glasses.
What I would say about the family in the car, and I do remember that, and I am a dog person. I love all animals, but I am a dog person, so I certainly remember the puppy. But, you know, I'm father to three myself, and I think this is, for me, in the EV industry, what I really like about it is most of the other gigs that I've had, in the best way possible, it's a paper-based exercise. We sign an agreement, something happens somewhere, and we never feel or touch it again. But with little people, young people in that sense, they still get excited about, and certainly mine do, when we go visit a charging station, we got to unplug it, hook it in, dash the RFID card. There's some theatrics to it. And what I really like is that's a really good way of engaging the younger people or the generation of people that we really need to keep the infrastructure running for the next 30, 40, 50 years or so. So even when I saw that car there, I was like, hey, I'm going to help you out. It's raining. Let's get you moving with a free charge or whatever. Was actually, I could see, hey, they're excited about this moment and all of that with it. So I love when we have the next generation of workers potentially getting excited to come join what we do here. And what I also think is they're more sustainability minded than any of us were. And that's really good because that's what we need. That's the sort of talent and attitudes we need to come into our sector.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
I'm loving this kind of mindset of looking like you've reflected on where you started, but I'm beginning to see that vision for the future, you know, from oil and you know, you couldn't have started in much more of a dinosaur related place, could you? But now looking to the future, looking to that new generation, a father of three, hearing your kids, helping families. What's the vision and the mission, both personally, because it sounds to me like you're a real personally driven person, but also the sort of EDRI mission as well. What are the two missions?
Yeah, and I think for us, potentially, you know, speaking on behalf of all, if not most, charge point operators, when we put a hub in the ground, that hub is going to exist for probably no less than 20 years, maybe 30 plus sort of thing, because typically that's the agreement or the lease terms we've done. So actually that infrastructure is there regardless. And that is, I think, a really important reminder, even to myself, that even if I don't have this gig anymore, I go on to do something else in clean technology somewhere else, my work today or our work today, all of us listening in and us on the call right now, is going to exist in decades from now. And if I rock up with someone to one of these installations in 10 years, I want it to be a good installation. I want it to be done right, because it's a reflection on how all of us reflected and motivated the industry at that point. So for us, certainly at EDRI here across Europe, but certainly in the UK, is we are a new CPO. We've been going 3 years. And I know Eon's a big brand. It's been going for much, much longer than that. But from a CPO lens, we're young. In many ways, maybe a bit immature compared to the mature CPO market we've got kicking around here in the UK. But there are some huge privileges to that, because what we've been able to do is learn from the other CPOs. And that's not I do not mean that in a belittling comment, because we all make mistakes. But actually, the idea is to learn from them so we can learn. So for us, it's a case of trying to get the right kit in at the very beginning. So generally speaking, they are typically 300 kW chargers. They're trying to be, you know, they're slightly more powerful units in the 50s, 100s, and 150s. we now have a philosophy for the last 24 months or so. We will not install a site without improved accessibility. Everything must be curb-free. There must be no bump stops. The cables must always be longer at 5 meters. It's these sort of things that they were the early learnings, and we've tried to get right. It's in silly, like, I don't want to turn up to a site and there's a puddle as I step out, right? Have we got the drainage messed up? Let's get the drainage right. Even things like CCTV, we've got every single site which has a HPC unit on it has CCTV on it. So Paul, really for me around trying to think in the future is actually maybe it's a bit selfish. I'm trying to avoid the personal embarrassment. In 10 years time, someone turns up and says, Dev, why on earth did you guys do this? And I'm like, oh gosh, I don't have an excuse for that. But constantly looking for feedback. We're brand new. We're still looking to learn.
Doesn't that make you the best person for the job, though? That's probably, as you say, why you got snared for it. But there's more to it than this. You mentioned the kit there. You've got the impressive Alpatronic units. You've got the future-proofed grid connection. You've got contactless. You've got screens. You've got no bump stops. Like, the cables are weighted so that if people struggle, they can be supported with the arms. It's an amazing thing. But I do believe in you. I think you are the leader here pushing this forward. And before we went to air, we were laughing together because you are a bit of a petrol head. You know, you get this. You love this. You're in a classic car club, I think you said. Tell us more about how you strike that balance between the future and the now.
Yeah, momentarily rewind to the tape. It's very kind of you to say it's me. What I would say is, Idri here in the UK, there's about 10 of us. So it's barely anything, right? And it's quite, in many ways, when you've only got a few of you kicking around, everyone says this, but it's a bit more of a family. I'm really fortunate, actually, that the people I've got around me stop me becoming a dinosaur. So they're constantly pushing and challenging. And I would say, actually, it's the other people around me that drive this. Fundamentally, I'm there to take a judgment position on commercialization and risk, I guess. But of course, I try and employ a moral compass in and around that at the same time. But hey, just the momentary rewind of the tape, sorry. I think in regards to, we all have things we like to do outside of work. And what's great is when they cross over, because it means we genuinely enjoy our job because of what we do socially crosses over. And you are right, sorry. There's a, you know, I'll do a track day every couple of months or so. So I have a specific track car. I have a V8 from the early 90s. I have another car from 1981. There's less than 15 of them left, kind of thing. There's a few of them kicking around. And I actually think this is so interesting. And it cuts into a wider conversation. Over the last few years, being part of the car club, I'm constantly challenged in, I would argue, a friendly environment, I guess, around EVs, and we know the debate around it. Talking here and anyone listening in and watching this, it's a safe space, but we know the debate fundamentally. And I do recognize that. I said the challenges are the noise, the sound, the feel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what I do think is let's roll back to the petrol station forecourt industry 20, 30 years ago. There wasn't a diesel pump. It was hidden away in the corner somewhere. I'm not questioning anyone's age. I certainly remember that. It was the grays on my beard here, but the diesel pump was in the corner. Then you had a vision where it was more financially beneficial for company car drivers to transition to diesel because of the benefit in kind and tax breaks, et cetera, et cetera. So then we ended up in a position where every pump now has a diesel pump on it is alongside your typical petrol one as well. And now here we are finding ourselves shifting to electric. So for me, first of all, it's always reminding all of us, whatever mobility machine that we have, is that we've been through technology changes. This is just a technology change. So petrol and diesel drivers had the same challenges and discussions between them, and we've got that going on again. So that's not a problem. I welcome that debate, and I think a number of us do at the same time. What I do like, and we see that with the vehicle OEMs right now, is when you go to your traditional manufacturer, and I'll pick on BMW for a moment. BMW have their standard cars, then they have a division called M Performance. And then they have a division called Motorsport. They are their halo cars, the M3s, the M4s, M5s. If anyone's aware of what they are, you know, Google them later on. But what we've seen with things like Hyundai with the IONIQ 5N as a good example, they are also trying to create their halo cars. These are the vehicles that get people excited. And that's exactly the sort of vehicles we go back to your question around, they're not exciting me. Well, I'm telling you, the vehicle OEMs are really trying, in my opinion, to get people on board and excited. I quite like watching that, because what I would say is right now, life is really expensive. And we know that, right? And the common denominator amongst all of us, taking emotion aside, is money. And right now it's just cheaper. If you've got the privilege of home charging to have an EV there. So in that car club, what's I find hilarious is a number of them have transitioned to the Daily being an electric car. And these are the same people 24 months ago would challenge me on it's never going to take off. But there you go. I love those debates.
I've got to say, Dev, that I mean, and whoever had about 17 minutes before I mentioned China, because I've just come back from China, having spent about, well, 10 days, but sort of 5 of those days going round the largest motor show in the world. Now, it was a motor show. It wasn't an electric show. But because it was China, it was majority an electric show.
Yeah.
I saw some of the coolest stuff that I have seen in my life. So let me give you the picture. So BYD had a whole hall, right? And they had, oh gosh, I can't even remember the name of this supercar, but it was they've got a brand called Yanglang or something like that. It's a, you know, predominantly a Chinese name, but this vehicle is a supercar. It's the fastest electric car around the Nürburgring. So it's got like some crazy time. But the crazy thing about this thing is it's got like a 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds or something, like utterly bonkers. And my favorite fact about it is that at 120 kph, about 80 miles an hour, it can jump. And yes, I said jump. Jump 6 meters. So it can just kind of compress like the hydraulics compress in the chassis. It gives a little pop and literally jumps. So you can get over potholes, gaps in the road in case the road just kind of collapses. It did it in a distance. But also, of course, if you're trying to escape the police and they put the stinger out, it will jump that as well. Just like, yes, this is the kind of technology that will get the petrol heads engaged, right?
Well, Paul, first of all, I've done the Nürburgring a few times myself, so the car nerd in me does keep an eye as where I can on how those league tables move. So I know the exact vehicle you're talking about, and I think what's really interesting about this one, let's go back to the iPhone, right? The original generation one iPhone. I think it wasn't even 3G, it was 2G back then, kind of thing. But that was a pivotal moment from a technology perspective where now we all have smartphones because Apple at that time innovated and pushed. And I think what I love about the Far Eastern, in this case China, and I have been watching the coverage on that show, and I know BYD Stand was an absolute monster, was actually they are really pushing every other manufacturer, European-based, let's argue, to really up their game. So we saw that with Apple that then took the fight to Samsung and others to say, hey, you got to turn up things a little bit. That's what's happening there. So I do support that because I think this is really neat because that tech starts to dribble down into everything we do here. But on the flip side, if we look at the European manufacturers, I think we are also hitting a really interesting pivot point in the last 12 months or so with the new Classe from BMW and the upgraded electric drivetrain from Mercedes on the new CLA. And I'm like, great, this is happening now with this competition with, I mean that in a sense, it's a friendly fight because I like competition, but this is meaning it's better for the consumer because now we're getting faster choice, faster improvement. And if it goes back to the earlier comment and we were talking about car clubs and track days and things like that, These sort of innovations are exactly what we need to help people traverse across that aren't in EVs at the moment. And I don't think people should be forced into it. I understand there is some resentment there, but particularly for UK buyers, what we drive is still quite an emotive subject. We do like our cars, right? Or our vehicles. And this is that sort of tech, which you were seeing in China about, you know, in the last few weeks of that show. I'm like, good. It needs to dribble down and does dribble down to improving the innovation with the other stuff we've got going here as well. But yeah, I have kept an eye on that show. It was, right. It just looked potentially all electric.
Yeah. And there was so much interesting stuff going on. And what stood out to me, and BMW probably were the least of the concerns, but what stood out to me was that the Chinese seemed miles ahead. I mean, like genuinely. But what I'm hearing now is that VW certainly have partnered with XPeng. XPeng are a big Chinese manufacturer. They've now put in the chassis, the rolling gear, the battery, the motor, the charging equipment. All of it is now XPeng, and then along come VW and put a top hat on it. You know, the seats, the infotainment, all of that sort of stuff. And you sort of think, wow. And I think this is the way forward. And I want to bring this back to obviously your core, because, you know, as I look at what you've done, you talked about learning from your competitors in many ways, sort of, you know, removal of the bump stops, nice screens, maybe, you know, canopies, all of the different bits and pieces, something you'll be proud of in 10 years' time. How do you see the competition shaping your industry now and going forward? And where do you think the true battlegrounds are? And is it cost of energy? Is it the technology? Is it speed of charging? Where do you think it's going next?
I think there's two answers for that. There's a personal consumer answer, and then there's the answer as me leading a CPO here. From a personal consumer perspective, it's good for all of us. And certainly I like the fact that we've got way more interest in just bolting chargers down in the country, up and down. And I think also the fact there's an increasing conversation around, I guess, consolidation within the charge point operator market. And we're seeing some of that in the last 12 months or so. And there's some CPO business leaders there that have done some great work in that space. That from a consumer lens is also, I think, a very good thing. If we, and forgive me, I'm probably talking too much about petrol and diesel here, but it's a relevant point in the sense that everybody you know knows how to go fuel up a car with petrol and diesel because it's so standardized. It's so standardized. It's not nuanced. In our EV space, we have some nuances, right? Because the charging equipment isn't standardized to a certain degree. When you initiate the charge and uninitiate a charge isn't totally standardized in its own right as well, right? So this is the thing. From a consumer lens, Paul Sarra is like, I think that'll be good to see that consolidation because it'll start to standardize the customer experience. Because let's remember, nobody talks about, I went and filled up my car with petrol today because it's dull. Why would you do that? It's dull. Dull's a good thing. At the moment within our EV charging space, it still can be a thing when you go try out a new hub, a new charger or something like that. That's a good thing. It has novelty. It's excitement. But it's not dull. I think mission success for us is going to be when it's just so, it works every time. It's so normal. It's dull. And I think consolidation allows us to get to that. From a more business over lens on from an EDRI UK perspective is, what have we got? We've got, as we talk today, probably about over 300 charging bays in the ground. Over 200 of them are HPC or connected to typically 300 kW units. I'll probably close in on the 400 bays by the end of this year. So it's a small-ish network, but it's largely all HPC. For us, what we really want is all of our customers to have access to a HPC every 50 miles. We haven't achieved that. That's really the mission we're working on. Whether we fall into something else or go somewhere else, not really sure right now. For us as a business, we're really still in startup mode. 3 years is nothing for a CPO. And maybe people aren't aware of this, or some of the listeners listening in is, for the average CPO, it takes about 18 months to get the first charger in the ground. That's one piece of kit, right? We are clear of 300 bays, clear of 200 HPC in just about 3 years or so. So Paul, what I would say, if there was a case study around how you mobilize a CPO super, super fast, I would argue it's probably EDRI UK, but it's done with really good people. As I said earlier on, I've got the right people kicking around me over here. I've got the right support from Central in E.ON on a German level as well. And fundamentally, we've got the right partnerships. You know, we've got the right people we're working with to help us get it done. I don't like the word subcontractor because you can't move at speed without partnering with someone because you all have to take a bit of risk. But Paul, there's kind of a broad answer around, I see it good as the consumer when we join up. So I think that customer experience will improve. And right now, I think a number of us are still in build out mode anyway.
Wow. You might be very good at building charging hubs, but the acronym police are coming for you, I think. Paul, over to you.
Well, so we have a rule. We have a rule here that acronyms are not allowed. Well, they are allowed, but only after we know it. Go on. Do you know which one it is?
I think I said HPC, high performance charger.
You know,
in the simplest sense, actually, you know what we should say? So it's, we print 300 kW on the side of the chargers. We'll print 400 because I'll move to the 400 kit. What on earth does that mean to a new person in the EV space? Doesn't mean anything, right? So actually, you're so right to challenge, because we've been challenging ourselves. It's like, do we bother even having that on the side of the kit? Because we know in the space of this box of us three and a proportion of the people listening in, we know that. We know about charging curves. We know about 80%, all of this, the jargon. But to everyone else out there, it's just jargon. It doesn't mean anything. And I think you're right. Maybe we need to challenge that.
I think we should call it high power charger. I just think that's a better way of putting it. Like, you know that when you plug in, you're going to get a good whack. And the thing that's really missing in that consumer behavior has been my business for 20 years. Every job I've had has been centered on the consumer experience and the science behind behavior change. And sustainable transport infrastructure has been my whole life. We've learned a lot, and I'm not seeing it fully applied here in the EV space. There's a lot of lessons we can learn. We need to be thinking about the behavior change triggers that cause people to want to go EV, as well as the stick that tells them they must. Now, that comes with infrastructure. That's why I was so glad you would come on the show. If you've achieved all that in 3 years, goodness knows we'll have to get you back on in a year's time, see if you hit those targets and see where we are. But it's more than that. You're speaking from the heart, and you're right, transport is a hugely emotive subject. And it doesn't matter where you look, the behavior change comes down to just a handful of things. For most people, it's wealth. So the commercial models behind it, if you're a fleet, or indeed your back pocket for total cost of ownership at home, TCO, acronym police, I didn't do it, I didn't go there. But more than that, it's lifestyle. So when you are using a charging hub, you'll be there 10, 15, 20 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes. If your vehicle's powerful enough to take that greedy charge off those high-powered chargers, then you'll be on your way. You don't even need to think about it. Before you even blink, you'll be gone. And it's really interesting with the commercial model around that, because your hubs are situated next to facilities and places where people can go, rather than trying to provide them with something there and then. Is that because you recognize the challenges with bigger batteries, faster onboarding, higher powered chargers? Those commercial models aren't so much about dwell time anymore.
Yeah, and I think the lifestyle one is a sensible comment there, Sara, in regards to where we position the hubs, or where we prefer to position them. I think a number of us have got normalized, they're used to the fact. In fact, I quite enjoy the fact that actually I've got to take some time out. And I don't know if any of you are like me, or any of the listeners, you suffer from email anxiety. I can hear my phone digging and I'm like, right, you need that 30 minutes to pull over, get a table somewhere, and start to clear some stuff down. But for me, from a personal level, it's been very, it's been a really good mind-setting moment. The car's taking care of itself and it's getting juiced up at the same time. So what, that lifestyle thing I've built in for years, and I think a number of us has, in terms of it's just actually a good moment to take some time out and reset and refresh. In regards to actually where we position them, that's been a real journey for us, actually. We have got better at it. And I think we did certainly ponder, and we had some opportunities on some sizable chunks of land where we could take the whole thing and put in our own food and beverage operator, put in our own set of toilets and things. And I'm not saying that's off the cards, but then we went on another exercise and we actually tiered food and beverage operators. We went through an exercise. It took a little while in terms of what do we consider our tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four. And I'm not going to call them out, but I think you'd be surprised that we were putting McDonald's, Taco Bell, things like that. And we were putting Costa and Starbucks and those sort of providers, because I think your wealth comment was relevant. There's an element where actually you've got a social economic demographic right now that potentially likes to go out and spend their money on certain food and beverage retail outlets at the same time. And that suggests the type of vehicle they potentially invested in as well. So for us, we are quite wedded to, I guess, handing over or being next door to people that know how to run a retail establishment and understand that customer experience, because that's not us. Our customer experience is improving the charging environment. But what we are, the conversation we're really having from a lifestyle perspective is, whether you like it or not, the car's stuck there for a little bit of time. So you want to be next door to a food and beverage outlet that is, well, clearly convenient, clearly a sensible price point, has toilets there, and typically is part of your lifestyle as well. So we've worked really hard to partner with developers or seek out sites where we believe it's complementary to what we want as an Eon or an Eon Drive infrastructure charging experience, rather than developing themselves.
I love that. And I see you doing it, which is why I wanted the praise where it was due. And you're part of a community. We've seen a lot of CPOs reject sort of more the rural locations. They want the strategic road network. Of course we do. But what you talked about earlier with the consolidation of the market potentially leading to a standardized charging practice, that will only get us so far. We do need policy and legislation and a little bit of a guardrail to make sure that for people coming forward now with the manufacturing, and I've only learned this recently being at Paythrough for 4 years, it's as simple as this payment terminal has to wake up the charger, or the charger wakes up the payment terminal. This is what dictates how quickly the driver can or cannot plug in. That payment reversal is the biggest bugbear on all the forums of people thinking that they've paid for their charge immediately when they actually have not. And it was really nice, Paul, to hear you talking along with Becky from VUCA about the fact that a lot of commercial vehicle drivers are finding that problem payment systems is the most annoying thing. But I think with the weight you bring to the market and the speed and pace at which you're rolling out, we should be utilizing you more, Dev, or anyone from your team to get this message across that you should turn up, know exactly what you're going to be charged, as in the pence per kilowatt hour. You need to plug in, and it needs to be easy to reverse that and leave and get a receipt. So I think credit, RoachG, you've done that really well. I challenge you to help us do more to get towards that standardization. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, sorry. And I love the challenge. And that's exactly when we're presented with the challenge, we see it as a learning opportunity. Because actually, we don't resent that. It's like, right, okay, neat. This is a good thing, and the team absolutely relish when problems are presented. There's never been an instance within EDRI that we've been presented with a problem and not been able to overcome that. What I would say is actually think, Sara, one thing is we have been very quiet. You know, we've kind of, in 3 years' time, we've kind of just turned up. And I don't think anyone's really aware of how quick the network has moved up. And actually, if you go on Google and check the sites, they're all 4- or 5-star rated sites at the same time. So we clearly are doing something right from a customer experience perspective. There's still learning going on. So typically, from up until April this year, when we opened a site, we opened that site at 39 pence per kilowatt hour. No one knew about it. And that was no subscription, no membership, just you turn up and use the site, right? I think they're at 44. So still typically really, really cheap. And this is for a high performance charger, right? And that for us has also been a case of, we've noticed a number of CPOs going down the route of subscriptions and memberships. Love that. Totally get it. And I guess on your comments, sorry, if you're a fleet driver and you're doing big, big miles, it totally makes sense. We're down the lens of, at the moment, we want no faff, no app, no faff, no fuss, actually. It's a case of, right, so no, that's the cheapest price possible. It is that. So maybe if we traverse to that, maybe later on, but what we're trying to do is trying to invite the new drivers, the guys and girls that are in their EV for the first time. And they're already like, oh, God, the bays aren't big enough in some sites. There's no lighting. There's no this. The cable isn't long enough. And now I need a damn app. No. We're trying to make this as easy as we can in that journey. So I think for us, yes, take the point that we probably need to be more vocal about it. We do recognize that. But what we are about here is, you know, we work quietly and I think in a more of a humble fashion, which is the earlier comment, these sites are existing for 20, 30 years. Just trying to get it right in the early years, probably need to shout about that a bit more. But we don't resent the others. In fact, I use everyone else's charge point operator hubs, CPOs, and because I like learning from them. So for me as a consumer, I like going out there and do these things. And from us, from an EDRI UK perspective, take your point. We will start to shout a little bit more.
Well, EDRI need to shout. Let me be absolutely clear about this, because I had no idea that you had learned from maybe one or two or three others that have taken pricing and made it, I think, reasonable. Now, I think there's a benchmark in the sector. And I think, you know, when I'm working out total cost of ownership models for my clients, my end user clients who are, you know, considering switching over to electric vans that might have to charge somewhat publicly from time to time, if it's, you know, if we're looking at pricing, it's like 50p and below means that it's probably okay. And 50p and above, if you're relying on that number, it starts to fall into, it's a questionable decision in terms of running costs, fuel only. But You've heard about this. Now, I didn't know this. 39 pence as a start away and 44 pence as a sort of a number that you want to put out there in the public domain. What it does is it proves to me that you're finding a different way, and that is really exciting for me. And I want to shout about that, because any CPO wanting to go down a route that says we want to make this accessible for all, we're using our parent probably, and the sort of the secure foundation that you've got, which is I think wisdom, it gives you that real basis for success in the future. And I think it will definitely turn people's minds as they get to know 44 pence versus 92 pence, which I paid just yesterday.
Yeah, same 89p for me yesterday. I was like, I'm sitting here for the bare minimum time. I don't want to be any longer than that. And I'm gone. So that's not what they want me to do. It's gone. I can see it being a problem.
So in the worst case scenario with us, it's 74p in the worst case scenario. So it is, I would argue, sitting in the middle. And that's no app, no nothing. It's just you rock up, and that's the worst case scenario. In regards to the lower rated stuff, we really push that on the sites, particularly when we open a site. We leave it there for a number of months as well, because what we want is people to turn up, give us feedback really, really fast, and tell us, is it working? Where is it not working? And soak up that information. In regards to Fleet, Paul, I think you're spot on, right? And I think particularly over the last couple of months, it's been really interesting. And we talk about vans in particular. Fuel, diesel is really expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe some people don't know that because they're all EV drivers, but outside, diesel is really expensive, right? And I think it's going to be interesting over the next 12 to 24 months or so, the uptake of increasing number of electric vans, even guys and girls with small fleets out there, and they're suddenly finding they're now spending... It was £60 a week on diesel, now it's £100. That's going to make a material difference to these people. So I think actually working with fleets and always recognizing the total cost of ownership and what can we do with them to support that is really important. And for us, certainly at EDRI here in the UK, we typically think about 25%, up to 25% of our utilization is coming from fleet, van in particular. And as we see them on the CCTV, and it's all the major brands out there. Now, what's interesting, we never invited them. And that's not a disparaging comment. We love them. And what tells me that is that actually, if we could work, we want to work more closely with these guys and girls. Say, hey, talk to us now. What's working there? What isn't working there? So as a thing, we started to investigate, and we're still investigating that, having some sort of storage lockers on the sites as well, where people can down tools, swap out parts, things like that. Because you're right, if the van is inevitably coming there anyway to juice up and get charged up, can we be integrated within their network of depots and things like that to help them out at the same time? So this is just one example. I think there's so much work that could be done there. Yes, on the total cost of ownership, but also around how do we make this more easier for everybody at the same time and get these last mile deliveries working a little bit more efficiently. So I think there's way more work that can be done. And certainly for us at UK, it is the next phase of what we're looking into, is like, how do we get better at that?
Exciting. It really is exciting. And what I've sort of heard all the way through this conversation is you listening and taking inspiration. And it kind of leads me to a question we often ask people, who has been instrumental in you becoming the person you are, both maybe in and outside of business? Who have been those leaders, those examples? Because I think they're really important to give a shout out, but also it speaks to who you are.
Yeah, yeah. I think probably within the industry, there's an individual called Anne Buckingham. She's one of the... Well, it sounds like you know her.
We do.
Yeah. So there you go. So Anne, for me personally, has been... She was the one that invited me into the industry. It was a case of, I know nothing about electric vehicles. I'm not the right guy for this. But I was like, no. I think you're nice enough, Dev. And also, you've got a sensible commercial head. We'll work this out. And the rest is history there. So from Anne's perspective, I'd say within the industry, it was her. Outside of that, I think your moral compass and your drive and ambition, I guess it's a bit of a cliche answer, but probably from my father. He has the classic immigrant story. He'd tell you he turned up with a fiver in his back pocket, blah, blah. I know all of it's probably untrue, right? But it's exactly that. I'd say from a personal perspective, it's coming much closer to home from father within the industry, and Buckingham, who sits over at Amplify at the moment in a position over there. But those two individuals have probably had the strongest steer in me, not just from a commercial acumen perspective, but also both of them, I would say, for a moral compass perspective as well. And I think you've heard me say that a few times. I think we've all got a responsibility to always think and remind ourselves about that, because if we don't have that in our minds today, which it's not going to go right for tomorrow.
Absolutely. I just messaged her to tell her that you said that. Well, because she'll love that. She does owe you beer, and noted and on the live recording. But I'm so with you, Dev. I do think credit where it's due. Lifting others up is obviously a massive thing for our industry. And you're right. I have a favorite phrase, which is rising tide lifts all ships. You're trying other charge point operators to see what the general user experience is like. You're welcoming fleets on site. You're trying to support those brand new drivers with introductory pricing. What was it you said? No app, no faff, no fuss. Paul very kindly wrote that for me here so I wouldn't forget. And I'm completely with you. I think drivers need to know the price, tap, and then go. Nothing else is required. Contactless all the way. And interestingly, you said RFID at the top of the call, but I do think contactless is a real strength of your network as you move forward.
Yeah, there is a number of our sites kind of a plug and charge in it. So all that stuff is going on to get to the point that you barely need to interface with it. And this is the point. Remember, we want to make it dull. Sounds terrible, I know, but I know it's we have enthusiasm, that's good. But in a decade's time, this has got to be dull. And I think that's mission complete.
Actually, there was something you said that really pricked my ears up, which was that, no, we don't talk about petrol and diesel refueling because it's dull. However, we bloom and do when that thing squirts petrol over your shoes, or there's a queue, or the price has gone up again. So again, negativity travels far faster than positivity. And I think we've all got a collective responsibility to be talking about how great our charging experiences were, except we don't do that. We say, oh, too expensive, or oh, I couldn't get on, or this one didn't work. Well, that's probably 10% of 90% of successful charges. So it's already quite dull, but I think the wider market needs to see how incredibly dull it can be.
I think, though, on a petrol station forecourt example, we have two sites that are actually on a petrol station forecourt. They were very early ones for us, so 3 years ago, let's say, right? We don't have any more, and we won't do any more. I know others do, and I think they do a wonderful job in getting that site sectioned off and clean. But for me, I don't want to be mixed with that, because I think in the future, I don't think that's where an EV driver is actually in 5 years' time really going to want to charge up. I also don't think an automated Costa kiosk in the retail environment is really where I want to get my coffee out of. Not that I'm a coffee snob, but I want it done if I'm paying for it, and I want the barista to do it properly, sort of thing. So I think even in that environment, you're right, Sarah. It's like, it's fine for now. Yeah, thumbs up, double thumbs up in the sense of, yep, gets me what I need to. But in 5 years' time, is that going to be fine? I'm not sure. I think we're going to be underneath that. So I love the work the other CPOs have done on their bespoke out of time. So I think it's super, and we are learning from that all the time.
Brilliant. There's that word again, learning. Well, Dev, we're sort of coming into an end. We've had a really great picture of EDRI and your mission and your vision. I think, as crude as it is, one of the standout things we've learned is that you could be as low as 44 pence per kilowatt hour, or even 39 pence per kilowatt hour. And that gives, I think, a lot of people, it's sort of like hope that actually there is a different pricing process coming into the industry, which will hopefully bring down that longer term stuff. But we have a little closing tradition as we get towards the end. Now, I don't know whether you know, but every podcast. Now, as those of you that know my normal background, you will know that I'm away from home. And for those of you that know me really well, I've got a terrible memory. So therefore, I don't have the proper one here. But I have something equivalent, which is the magic selfie stick.
Oh, the stealthy stick is way better than the seashell.
Because this has been magic for me. I've built a career and a reputation around my selfie stick, but I am going to share with you the magic selfie stick, aka the magic Eevee Cafe magic wand, to hand to you this. There you go. It's coming across the ads here. There we go. He's got it. And you now get one wish, Dev, to kind of, I don't know, tell us what would you love to see? And it can be personal. It can be to remove the pool table, which we haven't talked about, in the background of your shot. Because we know, because we talked about it before, that you don't want it anymore. But anyway, so offers in on a postcard, please. But tell us, what would you wish for with your magic wand?
You know, in I guess for me, there is a... I think we're working on it, and I think it goes back to some of the earlier conversations we were having in getting the next generation of people enthusiastic about what we do here. And the problem is, the risk is it can be quite boring, because when you bolt these chargers in the ground, it's electricity and charging and stuff like that, and someone could just... You could see it's a glorified extension lead, right? No. When we're doing the deals to lease them, that's paperwork. It's legal real estate leases and things like that. And that there's a risk that that's not going to be hugely entertaining. So I think we've all got a responsibility to keep this sector as... I've said so much about making it dull is mission complete. But until that point, gosh, we've got to keep it inciting and enthusiastic. Because one thing I've really enjoyed... Even within my camp, not just my camp over here, and everybody's younger than me, which definitely makes me the dinosaur, but I've really enjoyed the fact that there's some young talent that's come in and challenged and questioned even my direction sometimes. I didn't see that. And that's the value of having new attitudes and people from outside our industry coming in. So for me, Paul, sorry, what I want to see is just talent soaking in all the time. Right, I don't think we should close ourselves off. I think we should be up for having new, fresh ideas, soaking in all the time. Because that, I think, keeps it exciting for all of us in terms of, oh, didn't think of it that way. So for me, I hope we have, and I want to take on the collective responsibility that this remains an interesting place to work for many years to come.
I love that. That is so cool, isn't it? I know this is close to your heart, that next gen piece. Interesting that, Dev, you want to make it dull as possible, but as exciting as possible. That's a lovely juxtaposition, I think you call that. Saz, this has been a great conversation. I feel really buoyed by listening to Dev and just hearing the journey and also the ambition. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, if only more leaders were as open to feedback, research, listening, questioning, challenging, raising the bar, inviting different talent into the same forum, we would be in a much better shape as our industry. We're not doing bad. The targets are set. We're meeting them with powerhouses like you. They're pushing forward your amazing team. We're here for it. We're here for you. And if there's anything we can do to raise it and get in government and get things straighter for the future driver, count us in.
You're both very kind. Thank you very much.
Now I can unmute my mic because the bell has stopped.
The bell has told. It is the time to end our wonderful time.
It's funny. I literally, the bell that is going is on from my primary school. So we're in the family home that was, I was here when I was, very, very young, go to that school.
In the war.
Anyhow, back in the just after the war, if you don't mind. But Dev, this has been fabulous. I feel thoroughly enthused and encouraged to have had this conversation. And I'm excited to speak to you beyond this as well, because I think there's a role that we as the Eevee Cafe can play. I think your desire to help with vans is really exciting for me. You know, I'm thinking, how can we help? What can we do? Because the sector needs the type of thinking that you've demonstrated here today. And it makes me very confident for the future of Eadry, you know, and everything you're doing as a CPO, a charge point operator. And for the future of HPCs, high power charging, getting miles into vehicles quickly, efficiently, and very cost effectively. Dev, you're a gentleman. Is there anything that you want to leave us with as a final thought, something that we've missed that we haven't talked about?
I actually think that last comment's relevant in the terms of, remember, EDRI here in the UK is 10 people. It's nothing. And I said it earlier on in the podcast, I don't like the word subcontractor. It's partnerships. So when you mentioned the EV Cafe, absolutely, right? Anyone else out there listening and watching this, if you think we're not doing something right, or you think, I think you can help us with it, do reach out, because the business is so reliant on these partnerships to help push it along. And hopefully I've left everybody that's listened in with an impression that we're open to it. We're absolutely open to it. And we like the conversation, the challenges in and around that. So for me, Paul Sarr, it's a case of, yeah, you know, we are, it's a lean team and we're relying on quality partnerships with people we enjoy working with.
There you go. Quality partnerships and people you enjoy working with. That's quality. Guys, this has been a fantastic conversation. Please do connect with Dev Chana on LinkedIn and any of the other social handles if you want to send us over. Obviously, follow EDRI and learn about where they all are, and we'll put the links to how to find those guys across the country, because you'll want to be winging your way there if it's within your journey and your route map. So, but also if you're interested in more chats just like this, head over to the evcafe.org website, where there are many more conversations, over 160 conversations with great people just like Dev. Dev is the first one with a pool table in the background. So you'll have to head over to YouTube to subscribe there if you want to see that. But it's been a fantastic conversation. Dev, thanks so much. Sass, thank you for joining me today, and we look forward to the next time. Have a great day, everybody.